$28.07 billion. Let that number just kind of sit there for a second.
It's a massive number.
Right. Over $28 billion settled in a single financial year across 52,222 individual loans. I mean, usually when we look at an industry report for a deep dive, there's, a slow buildup.
Bit of context first, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But the latest data from the Broker Times just hits you right between the eyes. Aussie has officially reclaimed the number one brokerage spot in the country, and they do it with a staggering 1,312 active brokers.
Which is just wild to think about. When you look at an organization operating at that kind of massive scale, it's almost intimidating.
Completely.
It's just a wall of numbers that can feel completely alien. I mean, when you hear figures like 28 billion and over 1,000 brokers, the immediate temptation is to just dismiss it. You think that's a reality entirely separate from my own.
Right. Like if you are listening to this right now as a solo practitioner, or maybe you're running a boutique firm with like two or three staff.
Exactly. You might look at that headline and think, well, they are playing a completely different sport. But what's really fascinating here is that the gap between a top-tier high-volume broker and an average one is rarely about, raw innate talent.
It's not just that they're better at the job.
No, not at all. The difference is the machine built around that broker. Scale is a system, it's not a secret.
So the magic isn't the individual broker, it's the scaffolding supporting them. And that is exactly our mission for this deep dive. We are not going through this report to overwhelm you with mega firm statistics,
Please no.
right, or make you feel like you need to immediately go out and hire 1,000 people. We are going to translate the operational mechanics of a massive behemoth into practical, actionable steps for you.
And I love the architectural analogy you usually use for this.
Oh, yeah. So we're looking at a massive 70-story skyscraper. You do not need to build your own towering skyscraper, but you can absolutely take the exact same load-bearing physics, the same architectural blueprints, and use them to build a completely bulletproof single-family home.
That structural perspective is the perfect way to frame it. Because the overarching theme of this analysis is operational leverage. Big firms don't just have more people, they have a set of deliberate, repeatable design choices.
And design choices scale down just as effectively as they scale up.
Exactly. But to understand how those choices actually function, we first have to demystify what those big numbers represent on a day-to-day individual level.
Let's unpack the underlying math of that $28 billion figure. Because right now, like you said, it just looks like a wall of money. But if you take that $28.07 billion and you divide it by those 1,312 active brokers, the narrative completely changes.
It really does. It averages out to about 40 settled loans per broker for the financial year.
And let's carry that math one step further. With an implied average loan size of around $537,000, it brings us to roughly 21 million settled per broker annually.
Which is the crucial moment in the data where the illusion kind of drops. When you break it down, 40 quality settlements a year is a productivity benchmark. It's not magic.
Right.
It is roughly 3 to 4 settlements a month. Or, to make it even more grounded, about one settled loan a week.
Okay, I have to jump in here because if I'm putting myself in the shoes of a solo broker right now, 40 loans a year might sound perfectly manageable in a spreadsheet.
Sure, on paper, it's easy.
Right. But the reality of a Tuesday afternoon is entirely different. Like if you're buried under a mountain of paperwork chasing up a missing Glink statement for the fifth time from a client who just won't check their email.
We've all been there.
Doing data entry at 9 o'clock at night, one settlement a week feels like climbing Everest every 7 days. The context switching alone is just exhausting. So the real question becomes, how much of their time at these big firms is actually spent brokering versus just managing administrative chaos?
And you've hit on the exact friction point there. Those 40 settlements aren't achieved by working 80-hour weeks or sacrificing every weekend to catch up on data entry.
They're not just grinding harder.
No, they are achieved by structuring the physical hours of the day fundamentally differently. Top firms have basically engineered a reality where a much higher percentage of a broker's time is spent purely on work that actually moves revenue.
Meaning client-facing advisory meetings and making complex credit decisions?
Yes, and everything else is systematically stripped away.
Okay, let's unpack this. So it's like a high-end restaurant kitchen. The head chef doesn't chop onions or wash the saute pans.
That's a highly accurate comparison.
Yeah, because if they stop to do that, the timing of the entire dinner service falls apart and the restaurant grinds to a halt. They stay on the pass, tasting, adjusting, and plating. So in this scenario, the broker is the head chef.
They absolutely are. And it leads us directly to the first major piece of the scaling blueprint, which is role separation. This is the defining operational habit of scaled firms.
The rule is pretty absolute, right? Brokers only do broker work.
Exactly. The prep work, the processing, the document collection, the endless data entry into serviceability calculators to see if a client can even afford a loan. All of that routine lender follow-up goes to a support team.
And that could be in-house staff, part-time help, or a virtual assistant. The source material actually outlines a brutal but incredibly clarifying test for this.
Oh, the license test.
Yes. If a specific task does not explicitly require your professional credit license or your unique personal client relationship, it should not be consuming your highest value hours. Does this task legally require my license? If no, get it off my desk.
It's a great test.
Conceptually, I love it. But I hear hire a processor and my brain immediately flashes a giant red warning sign about profit margins.
Right, the cost.
If I'm a solo broker, taking on a salary feels like setting my current revenue on fire. The immediate objection is always the cost.
Yeah, the fear of margin drain is probably the most common psychological hurdle for small business owners. But the math they are doing in their heads is usually flawed.
How so?
Well, the mistake most solo practitioners make is weighing the financial cost of a support staffer against zero. They look at a processor's hourly rate as a pure subtraction from their current take-home pay.
You have
to weigh that cost against the dollar productive hours it physically frees up for you to generate new business.
So it's an investment in capacity, not just another expense line item on the profit and loss statement.
Think about the pure arithmetic of it. Let's say a virtual loan processor takes just 15 hours of administrative work off your plate every single week.
Which is huge.
It's massive. If you redirect those 15 hours exclusively into client-facing work, like more meetings, more referral networking, how many extra deals do you actually need to close to cover the cost of that processor?
Probably not many.
Often it's just one or two extra settlements a quarter. And once you hit that relatively low break-even point, every single settlement after that is pure margin.
It is margin you simply could not have reached before because you physically didn't have the hours in the day.
Exactly. You aren't buying help. You are buying the capacity to scale.
I know I'm guilty of this, and I think a lot of our listeners are too. Like, I've spent an hour perfectly formatting a PDF proposal just to avoid making a difficult phone call to a client. We use admin work as a form of productive procrastination.
Oh, absolutely. It feels like work, but it isn't driving revenue. It's comfortable to do the tasks you've mastered, even if they are low value. Handing over control requires vulnerability.
But bringing in support is completely useless if you don't actually have a system for them to follow. If you hire someone to help you without a defined process, you're just paying someone to watch you panic.
Yes. Which brings us to the second pillar of this blueprint. The absolute necessity of a repeatable process. You can't just hand an assistant a chaotic inbox and expect them to untangle your brain.
The source highlights a very specific cultural difference here. Top firms do not run on heroics. They run on documented workflows.
Every single file, from the moment a client makes an initial inquiry to the final settlement of the loan, moves through the exact same stages.
Right.
With the exact same checks every single time.
Because we all love jumping in at the last minute, right? Saving the deal, working late to pull a rabbit out of a hat for a client. It feeds the ego to be the hero.
It does. But heroics don't scale. A workflow does.
So how does a solo broker actually build one of these workflows without spending a month writing a corporate manual? Like, what is the actual mechanism?
You don't build it in the abstract. You document your reality. The next time a new lead comes in, you simply open a blank document and write down every single physical action you take. Step one, log into the system. Step two, send the introductory email template requesting payslips.
Step three, follow up in 48 hours if no response.
Exactly. You map the journey exactly as it happens. What's amazing about this step is that documenting your own process costs absolutely nothing but your attention.
It is the cheapest and most vital form of leverage you can build. Quality survives high volume only when it is systemized.
Right.
Okay, so time is reclaimed through role separation, and operations are stabilized with the documented process. The foundation is poured. But where do these massive firms point that reclaimed time?
That's the million-dollar question.
Because saving 20 hours a week is great, but if you don't have the tools to handle more volume or you don't have new clients coming in, you're just staring at a wall with 20 extra hours on your hands.
Right.
Let's talk about the technology they use to amplify that foundation.
Well, the assumption is always that a $28 billion firm must be using space-age, custom-built software that does everything automatically.
Right, some proprietary AI system.
But the deep dive into these top 25 firms shows a very different reality. They actually avoid software bloat, they pick a surprisingly small technology stack, and they use it to its absolute limits.
We are talking about a robust CRM to manage client relationships, a reliable serviceability platform to test loan viability, and perhaps an AI policy tool.
Yes.
And let's define that last one quickly for anyone not deep in the weeds. An AI policy tool is basically software that can instantly scan the constantly changing lending guidelines of 50 different banks.
Right. So instead of a broker manually reading through hundreds of pages of bank policies to see if a specific client qualifies, the AI flags the right lenders in seconds.
Exactly. And instead of chasing every shiny new app that hits the market, scaled firms master these core tools, saving 4 minutes on manual data entry because your CRM automatically populates a form it doesn't feel like much on one individual file.
But saving 4 minutes across 300 files, that is 20 hours. That's half a work week reclaimed just by utilizing the software you already pay for properly.
It reminds me of buying a home gym. Having 5 different elaborate, expensive machines that you only use as clothes hangers is infinitely worse than having one simple pair of dumbbells that you actually pick up and use every single day.
That is exactly it. Mastering one CRM beats half using 5 different productivity apps.
But again, 20 hours saved doesn't automatically equal money made. How do they fill that newly created capacity with actual revenue?
They point that reclaimed time directly at client acquisition, but not the way most brokers do. They focus on engineered leads.
Engineered leads. I like that phrase.
Yeah. Top firms do not sit around waiting for luck or the mood of the housing market to bring in referrals. They build strict mechanical systems that manufacture them.
I want to dig into the mechanics of that because manufacturing referrals sounds great in theory, but what does it actually look like in practice? A structured client review isn't just sending a friendly happy birthday email, is it?
Not at all. A structured client review is a calendar-driven, proactive touchpoint. Let's say it's the 12-month anniversary of a client's loan.
Okay.
The broker proactively runs a check to see if the client's current interest rate is still competitive in the market. They call the client with valuable, actionable information.
And during that specific call, after delivering value, they use a structured script.
Exactly. They might say, given how much rates have shifted, a lot of our clients' friends and family are feeling the pinch right now. Who do you know that might need a quick rate review?
Wow. It transforms a routine service call into a highly predictable lead generation engine.
It's deliberate. It's a systemized ask, not a hopeful wish.
Which flows perfectly into the next major insight from the source material. You can engineer all the leads in the world, but if your bucket has holes in it, you're just wasting water. And this is where I think a lot of smaller operations leave massive amounts of money on the table, conversion discipline.
What's fascinating here is the sheer obsession the biggest firms have with conversion rates. They aren't just looking at the top of the funnel, meaning how many leads are walking through the door.
Right.
They meticulously track the journey of that lead. They define their conversion rate as the exact percentage of initial client inquiries that successfully make it all the way to a settled funded loan.
Because lifting your conversion rate is vastly cheaper than buying more marketing.
Oh, incredibly so.
If you have 100 leads coming in, and your messy, unsystemized process means only 20 of them actually settle, your conversion rate is 20%.
Right.
But if you fix the holes in your bucket, like if you follow up faster, if your communication is clearer, and you get 30 of those original 100 to settle, you just grew your business by 50% without spending a single extra dollar on lead generation.
That is the exact mathematical reality. Yet, if you ask most solo practitioners what their inquiry to settlement conversion rate was last quarter, they can't skate it from memory.
They're just flying blind. They feel busy, but they don't know how efficient their machinery actually is.
Exactly.
So to synthesize this for the listener, you aren't trying to become a massive enterprise overnight. The goal of studying these big firms is to borrow one good process, add one support lever, measure one conversion number. You layer these systems on top of each other.
That layering is crucial. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, there is a hidden layer to all the scale that the source material brings up. It rarely gets the headlines that tech or virtual assistants get, but it is just as powerful.
Okay, what is it?
It's what the analysis refers to as quiet leverage, and that is specialization.
Quiet leverage. I'm really intrigued by this. How does narrowing your focus actually act as a lever for scale?
Consider the immense mental load of a generalist. If you handle every single type of scenario that walks through the door, first home buyers on Monday, complex commercial property on Tuesday, construction loans on Wednesday.
You are forcing your brain to carry the constantly changing policies and nuances of 50 different lenders across every possible niche.
Exactly. Every time a new file lands, you're practically starting your research from scratch. It is exhausting. And more importantly, it is slow.
But if I play devil's advocate here, specialization feels risky.
Sure.
Like if I focus entirely on lending for self-employed medical professionals and the banks suddenly tighten lending policies for that specific sector, my entire pipeline is wiped out. Being a generalist feels like a safer, diversified portfolio.
It feels safer, but it's often an illusion of safety that comes at the cost of massive inefficiency. The quiet leverage of specialization means turning your deep experience into raw speed.
Because you've seen it 100 times before.
Exactly. When you see the same type of complex scenario 40 times a year, you don't need to look up the policy. You intimately know the lenders who favor that niche. You know exactly what documents they will ask for.
That speed drastically increases your productivity.
Furthermore, because you become the undeniable go-to expert in that space, your referral network becomes highly concentrated and your conversion rate naturally rises. A focused practice is exponentially easier to systemize because the unexpected variations in your daily workflow are minimized.
Okay, but this raises a really critical concern, and I want to push back on this idea of speed. Because if we're talking about moving faster, systemizing everything, handing tasks off to assistants, specializing to reduce friction, doesn't scaling up inevitably mean you're going to drop the ball on compliance?
That's a huge worry for a lot of people.
In a highly regulated industry like finance, speed often sounds like a dangerous synonym for sloppy.
It's a very valid fear, but the reality observed in these top-tier firms proves the exact opposite. Scale, when executed correctly through systems, actually improves your compliance position.
Really?
The absolute golden rule established by the data is this: leverage must make your files better, not thinner.
Better, not thinner. I like that. Explain how a scaled process achieves that safety.
Because a scaled process removes human memory from the compliance equation. Let's look at best interests duty.
Right. The legal and ethical requirement to comprehensively prove that a specific loan is genuinely in the consumer's best favor.
A generalist relying on memory might forget to document a crucial conversation. But a systemized process embeds those best interest duty checks directly into the workflow software.
I see.
If step 14 of your process is upload best interest duty rationale document, and the file literally cannot digitally advance to step 15 until that field is completed, compliance isn't a memory game anymore. It is structural.
It's a forced function. If your workflow speeds you up by skipping the collection of critical evidence, that isn't leverage. That is just a massive liability waiting to explode.
Right.
But if your workflow speeds you up because the compliance steps are automatically triggered, templated, and enforced by the system, you are actually building a much safer business.
Precisely. Sustainable growth should strengthen your regulatory compliance, not stretch it to the breaking point. And because a specialist knows the unique documentation traps of their specific niche cold, their files are inherently cleaner to begin with.
All right, we've covered a massive amount of ground today. We started with the sheer awe of the big numbers, moved into the mechanics of role separation and repeatable processes.
We explored how compounding tech and engineered leads amplify that reclaimed time.
The critical importance of obsessing over your conversion rate, and finally, the quiet power of specialization and structural compliance. It is a lot to digest.
It really is.
And I know that trying to implement all of these levers at once is a guaranteed recipe for a burnout sprint. So let's transition from theory to immediate application. Where do our listeners start tomorrow morning?
You start by respecting the power of sequencing. The fastest way to stall your progress is to try and install all of these systems simultaneously.
You have to pick the single lever that causes the most friction in your business right now and focus on fixing only that for an entire quarter.
Exactly. And for most people who are drowning in administrative paperwork, that first domino is always role separation. Leverage compounds, but only because it is built in order, one deliberate, focused change at a time.
To help you figure out exactly what that first targeted change should be, the Broker Times article outlined a highly practical 4-step leverage audit. I want you to consider this your homework for the week.
It's a great exercise.
Step 1. Track your hours for 5 days.
For one single work week, ruthlessly tag every 30-minute block of your time as either dollar productive, meaning client-facing advice or complex strategy, or processing.
The resulting ratio of where your week actually goes is usually a massive, uncomfortable wake-up call. It's always painful to see how much time we waste on things that don't matter.
It's sobering.
Step 2. Name one task to offload. Look at that time audit and find the single most time-consuming task that does not require your specific professional license.
That is your very first candidate to hand over to a support person. Reclaiming even 3 hours a week starts the compounding process.
Step 3. Document one process end-to-end. Do not attempt to document your entire business manual.
Please don't do that. Just pick your single, most repeated, mundane workflow and write it down step by step, so it can theoretically be handed over to someone else to execute and quality check.
And finally, step 4, find your conversion number. Go back over the last 3 months. Calculate the exact number of initial client inquiries that came in versus the number of actual funded settlements that came out.
You simply cannot improve a machine if you don't know the baseline metrics of how it's running right now.
It is a brilliant, entirely self-contained audit. Track the hours, offload one task, document one process, measure one conversion rate.
Yeah, it gives you a clear path forward.
So to bring this entire deep dive together, what we've learned from dissecting the operational strategies of a firm that settles $28 billion a year is incredibly empowering.
It takes the mystery out of it.
The top brokerages aren't winning because their individual brokers possess some magical inherent superiority or work twice as many hours. They're winning because the system operating around the broker is simply designed better.
They built an environment where the broker's time is fiercely protected and aimed only at what truly moves the needle.
You don't need to copy their massive headcount or their huge capital budgets. You just need to steal their structural design.
And as we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final thought to ponder that expands beyond everything we've discussed today. We've talked extensively about offloading administrative tasks to support staff to reclaim your time.
Right.
But think about the trajectory of technology right now. If a solo practitioner is currently acting as a human router, manually moving PDF documents from an email inbox into a digital folder, or copy-pasting client data between spreadsheets they are currently competing with software that will soon be able to do that instantly for pennies using artificial intelligence.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If you don't systemize your workflow and offload your basic admin today, what happens in 2 or 3 years when AI can do all of that administrative heavy lifting perfectly for your competitor?
Exactly. If your business isn't systemized, it will be incredibly vulnerable to being rendered obsolete by those who are.
Wow.
But if you do the hard work of building these operational levers now, you build a protective moat around your high-level advisory skills, the empathy, the complex strategy, the relationship building, which is the one thing artificial intelligence cannot easily replace.
Systemizing isn't just about growing your revenue today. It is about future-proofing your absolute survival tomorrow. That is a brilliant and slightly terrifying point to end on. Your unsystemized business won't just be slow. It might eventually be obsolete.
It's the harsh reality of where the industry is going.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the mechanics of scale. Remember, your next big breakthrough isn't going to come from just gritting your teeth, drinking more coffee, and working harder. It is going to come from designing better. You don't need a skyscraper's budget. You just need its blueprint. Take that leverage audit, find your first domino, and start building. We'll catch you next time.